Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 176 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about a topic that I have wanted to discuss on the show for a long time. We're going to specifically dive into recurrent skin infections. What type of infections are there and how should you best deal with them according to a dermatologist? The reason that I thought this was a great conversation to have is because so many of my clients will struggle and suffer with skin infections and assume that it's just a flare. And a flare can take many different forms, but if you're dealing with an actual infection, it's really important to get help rather than just assuming that you've got to like change your diet or cut more foods out or take some botanical supplement for your liver. Like, people will do all sorts of things and they'll ask for advice from the wrong people when in reality, getting diagnosed with a skin infection is actually crucial if that's what you're dealing with so that you can address it appropriately. Because the longer it's allowed to fester, the more serious the problem can become and your options to treat it also can become more limited. So I wanted to invite back a really good friend of the show, Dr. Peter Leo. He's a clinical assistant professor of dermatology and pediatrics at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. He received his medical degree from Harvard Medical School and completed his internship in pediatrics at Boston Children's Hospital and his dermatology training at Harvard, where he served as chief resident in dermatology. While at Harvard, he received formal training in acupuncture, and he's written a textbook on integrative dermatology and has published over 100 papers. And you guys know he has been on the Healthy Skin Show a number of times just because he's such a giving, insightful physician that I love talking to him about these topics because he's so dedicated to helping his patients actually resolve what's going on. So without further ado, let's dive in. Thank you so much for joining us again, Dr. Leo. I really appreciate you coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be back.
I know, especially for today's topic. So to give you guys some context, it had occurred to me at a certain point that it could be possible that when we have certain skin infections, right? Like we talk a lot about staph when it comes to eczema, but people with psoriasis can also get staph infections. And when you're using a lot of creams, we have this diverse microbiome on our skin that could cause the potential of reinfection through your products that you're putting on your skin. And like, is that possible? And so I thought the best person to answer these types of questions to help all of you maintain healthier skin and hopefully avoid potentially reinfecting yourself with Dr. Leo. So, okay, first question, can you get a staph infection or a strep infection or whatever type of skin infection from products that you're using either on a daily basis or maybe it was like an antibiotic cream or a steroid cream or something that you've been prescribed?
Absolutely. I think the answer is a resounding yes. And part of the issue is, of course, well-formulated products have preservatives in them, in part to keep the growth of this kind of bacteria down, but also to keep the growth of fungal growths and molds, things like that, down as well. And we know from some of my early days, we were kind of mixing stuff up in the kitchen, trying different things. And you realize that stuff that is very natural, nature takes it back. You know, suddenly all of a sudden you have a big growth of mold on it, or you have stinky bacteria growing in there. So you realize, okay, why companies put preservatives in there. It's not just for fun or to poison people. In fact, I think it works against them a lot. You know, a lot of patients, they can be an allergen and an irritant. So we wish we didn't have to. And the purpose, though, is really to keep that growth down. Now, this is magnified many, many fold when you have somebody who already has some bacteria on their skin, right? So maybe even if they package it sterilely, if it's perfect when they put it in there, you reach in with your fingers, you know, this is particularly for jars. You reach in with your fingers, you take some of the cream out, you put it on your skin, maybe where you're either truly infected or at least carrying staph, because we know a huge portion of our patients with sensitive skin, atopic dermatitis, damaged skin, we know the microbiome is abnormal. And there probably is an overgrowth of staph aureus in particular, but as you said, strep can also be on the skin. And then you put your grubby finger back into that pot, right? And you do that again, now you've inoculated it. Now for some things, I think if there's enough preservative and there's not too much bacteria, you'll be okay. You can get away with that. But it's a little bit of a Russian roulette. And I've had patients who keep getting infected. And then I finally say, listen, let's get you fresh jars of everything, because they bring them in and they look kind of grubby. And I'll say, and when we reach in, instead of using our fingers, maybe we can use a clean spoon. So you can spoon some out and then put that in your hands, put that on. So only thing that goes in there is a clean spoon. That can really help. And then the next step is, can we find products that can get around this? So one of our tricky spots is pumps. So a lot of patients love pumps. I love pumps. They're so convenient. But historically, most of the things that come out of a pump are really lotiony. They're liquidy. And for sensitive skin and eczema, we tend not to want those. But there are some newer pumps that actually are durable enough to let creams pump out. So pretty thick. And the most exciting technology I've seen, a couple of French companies have done this, where they actually produce the moisturizer in a sterile environment. They package it and hermetically seal it with a one-way airtight valve. And I remember it was just, I mean, honestly, in the last couple of years, this is still new enough that we were at a little meeting and someone was saying, well, creams can't have no preservative because creams have water and water can grow bacteria and stuff. So it needs a preservative. And we, a couple of us who knew, so we turned and we said, actually, that's not true. This was a dermatologist. We said, it's not true because this company and other companies have done this hermetic sealing. So they can actually make a cream or even a lotion with no preservative, which is really exciting.
Wow. That is cool. That is really cool. But so for anybody listening who now they're putting their hands in the jar and they keep getting staph infections, this could be a problem. Like, so would steroid creams also be a potential issue? Because, right, because they're not an antibiotic. They're not an antimicrobial per se, right?
Correct. Absolutely. So steroids would be one, moisturizers for sure. But honestly, even as you say, potentially even an antibacterial thing, if you have like a compounded thing that has a low amount of antibiotic, you put enough staph in there and it will overgrow it to the point where it could just be colonizing a part of it or some part of the jar. And then again, every time you put your hand in there, you're just putting more and more bacteria on your skin.
So what do you say to someone who does get recurrent, let's just say staph infections, just for simplicity's sake. And it's like, again and again, like they, you give them an antibiotic, or I don't know whether you prefer topicals or oral medications for that. Do you also have to worry about like the clothes that you're wearing or the sheets of your bed? Like, are there other areas where we need to be concerned?
Absolutely. And it's amazing. Such a big portion of my practice is recurrent staph infection and staph colonization. And you're right. There are a number of ways it happens. So one of the big triggers, I think, is having multiple family members who are colonized. And we know that we carry staph in our nose. The anterior part of your nose can be a place where you carry staph. Now, for many healthy people, they're fine. It doesn't bother them. Their body kind of keeps it at bay. It walls it off and it protects you. But every time you wipe your nose or touch your face, you could then give it to somebody who maybe isn't as able to fight it off. And we've had families where we have so many staph infections after a while that we say, okay, everyone needs to decolonize. And we'll do things like antibacterial washes, and we'll have them put the mupirocin, a topical antibacterial, in their nose 3 times a day for a week. And I'll even have them take, everybody goes on probiotics. Like, we just need to like do a big reset, because it's like, you know, it's not good for the environment. It's not good for the patient to keep needing antibiotics. But with staph infections, you can't mess around. If you let it go too far, you can get really sick. You get hospitalized. You can be in all sorts of trouble. So we have to take it seriously, but we don't want to be abusive of antibiotics. And of course, we know every time we use that, we're potentially making super bacteria that are then able to resist those antibiotics.
So do you ever do like a culture of the nose? Because it was interesting you mentioned that. And I know Dr. Julie Greenberg has also mentioned staph can be in the nostril area. And I've read that elsewhere. Can you talk a little bit about just about that? Because I think that's an interesting thing that oftentimes gets sort of overlooked.
Absolutely. So we culture both the skin and the nose. And sometimes I'll even culture multiple family members when they're in the office. You know, if the parents are there, I'm going to say, I'm going to check you guys too. Again, especially in these really tough cases. And so many times we find that multiple people are colonized or just growing Staph aureus from that nose swab. And we think, I will say that the goal is to eradicate it. And we think we can do it sometimes, but I'll tell you that some of the studies are a little disappointing. All the stuff we do from antiseptic cleansers and mupirocin in the nose and all this stuff, many, many, many times they reset back to carrying Staph again. Mm-hmm. So we think part of the problem is that some people are just susceptible to it, and Staph is so pervasive in our environment now. If you are one of the folks who's a little bit weakened to it, and usually we think there's people that have leaky skin, their skin barrier's a little bit damaged, a little bit sensitive to it and susceptible to it, that they keep getting it again and again and again. So for those folks, it can be really a struggle. It's like an uphill battle of always trying to make sure and stay on top.
And what about, like, does Staph die when you launder your clothes? Or, because I know sometimes with, like, women who would have recurrent yeast infections, they'd be like, look, you got to get rid of those yoga pants. After a certain point, the yoga pants could be a problem because the yeast has colonized the pants and you probably got to get rid of them. So is it possible, too, that your clothing could also be an issue after a certain point, or your bed sheets? Like, maybe do you have to launder with a certain temperature?
Yes, I think that's a great point. I think clothing, bed sheets, you know, fomites around the house, they definitely can carry it, especially if we're not washing it regularly. You know, so most people don't wash their bed sheets. I figure most people don't even wash it once a week. Maybe sometimes even 2 or 3 weeks go by and you haven't washed it. Absolutely. But no, I do think that so long as we wash it in nice hot water with a detergent, you probably get all of it out. It's not a very, very tough bacteria. So outside of strange situations where maybe it's formed like a biofilm or something, I think you'd be okay just washing it. But you're right, things around the house can carry it. And again, pets, dogs can also carry it too. Wow. So then we have, you know, you give your dog a kiss or the dog licks your face. And again, you're passing it back and forth.
Oh boy. All right. So we got pets is a problem. So if you have a Staph infection right now, would you recommend that sheets, like, especially if it's a full body, like it's a big problem. We've got a large area covered in Staph or strep or something like that. Would you say every day the sheets should be changed and laundered to help try to get rid of that?
I think that would be awesome. It is a big ask, you know, doing that kind of laundry every day is a lot, but I think that would be great as we're treating it. And I think that's why we're so adamant about taking a daily bath or shower. And you'll hear this controversy, you know, sometimes particularly old school pediatricians will be like, no, bathe less frequently, bathe once every 2 weeks or something. And I think there was really a good wisdom to that in the old days, because many of the cleansers, or frankly, even if you just go in water by itself, water kind of strips your natural oils. So it could actually be a net negative for those patients. But now we're using super gentle cleansers. Often I like ones that are oil-based. So I feel like we're actually adding good stuff when we wash. But most importantly, we're rinsing off all the Staph, or some of the Staph at least. And then we can lock in the moisture with a good moisturizer. So I think the net effect is now positive. And there are not too much data on this, but a recent study really did show, they called it the wet method. They said bathing twice a day and moisturizing was much better to bathing once every 2 weeks, which was really neat.
And so what type of cleansers? Because I just heard you mention oil-based cleansers. So what is that?
Yeah, so it's been so neat to watch this. And I'll preface this by saying that many of my colleagues might kind of roll their eyes. Like a lot of my colleagues are kind of like, look, just pick a gentle cleanser. They're all pretty similar. And ultimately I agree. I'm not trying to be controversial, but I find that first of all, I like looking for little niches, like which is my favorite, which is the best, which one might get like just a few percentage points better, because I think we all know sometimes the difference between needing a steroid, needing a big gun medicine, needing an antibiotic and not can be just a little tiny bit. So if I can take all those little gains, you know, using the best of the best for all these little things, sometimes you add up to be enough that you don't need to do the bigger things. So that being said, there's been a kind of a revolution with cleansers. So the first revolution was with synthetic detergents. And I would say that like Cetaphil brand is one of the ones that's been around for a very, very long time. If you look at the history, I mean, I feel like it's more than 50 years or something. They were the first to kind of get away from a soap, you know, because a soap really starts with a fat and then it uses a really strong alkaline like lye to render it. And those are nice, but they're really harsh on your skin. You know, they do a great job of pulling fat and ripping things up. So we kind of don't want that on our skin, even though in a way they're kind of natural, but they're also pretty hard on our skin. So the synthetic detergents were the first round. much gentler on the skin. But now we're in a new era where I think we're seeing people actually formulate the cleansers with an oil. And there are a bunch of different brands, you know, that are on the market. If you punch into, you know, one of your search engines, oil-based cleanser, you'll find some really neat options. I like some of the French ones. There's a French one that I like a lot that's just really gentle. It's a little pricey, but not ridiculous. And I love it because I feel like after you wash, you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm actually more moisturized than before. Mm. It left a little oil behind. So I think those can be really great. And now a bunch of brands have them. So I think there were some early adopters, but now I think you can, CeraVe has a version of it. Eucerin has a version, and they're all really good. I don't think you can go wrong. Mustela has one. Avène is the one I was referring to too. So they're okay. All these good ones, you know, and I work with these companies in different ways. So I don't want to appear biased, but you know, I just think they're all interesting things to think about. So, that being said, and then if we moisturize right after, I think we really get a great net positive effect on the skin.
Okay. Because, I mean, the thing is with skin infections, I feel like people, and you could correct me if, you know, you have a different perspective on this, but I feel like a lot of times people try to muscle through a skin infection thinking that it's a quote unquote flare, and they're suffering for an unnecessary amount of time trying to manage a flare when in reality they have a skin infection. Do you find that that sometimes is the case?
Yeah, I think you've hit it, you know, right in the center of the controversy right now in atopic dermatitis world. So first of all, I completely agree with you. I think you're right on. If you really have a skin infection, you really want to get it treated. And I'll tell you, this is not trying to incite fear, but I actually had a patient when I was back in Boston, healthy, robust 18-year-old guy, was a football player for high school, had really bad eczema. I mean, just really bad, struggled with it a lot, got tons of skin infections. One day got a skin infection so bad, was in the hospital, and actually got a blood clot from it. Like it was so bad. It kind of actually created a clot and he had a stroke. So he basically became septic, and that's really scary. Now, admittedly, that's super rare, super out there. But I mean, we really thought it was like, yes, he had staph in his blood and that created a septic state. And then he got a clot. Crazy. So that kind of stuff scares the heck out of me, even though it's super rare. But even for the regular infections, maybe smaller, not that scary, they cause pain. They can spread to other people. They can keep going on and become chronic. So I think it is good to get it controlled. I think no one would argue with that. Where it gets more interesting and controversial is this concept of colonization. A lot of our eczema patients, they're not really infected. They don't have a fever, right? They're not in necessary pain. They don't have a high white blood cell count. Like if they went to the hospital, they'd be like, well, your skin looks terrible, but you don't have an infection. You can culture their skin and they'll grow tons of staph. But what we would call that, we'd say, okay, you're colonized. You're just colonized. The bacteria is taking residence on your body, kind of like the people with it in their nose. And it's not necessarily doing anything bad. That's kind of, I would say, the standard interpretation of what's going on. But in the past 5 or 6 years that I've been really deep diving into eczema and focusing on it, and I've really changed my view on this. I think we're coming around to it. So it's increasingly less controversial, which is kind of refreshing. But when I first started talking this way, people were like, he's a little bit out there. But it's based on the work of this guy, Dr. Richard Aaron. And I can't remember if we talked about him before.
I've had Dr. Aaron on the show. Okay, I think it's like episode 4 or something like that.
So he's amazing. He's a trailblazer. And it's fun because I'll briefly tell the story, but when I first learned about his plan, which is to put a little bit of antibacterial in a compound for the eczema patients, even if they're not frankly infected, because he really believed staph was playing a big role, I fully, openly, and it's in writing, I've written it up, that I rolled my eyes and I was like, come on. This isn't going to do anything. This is placebo level. Like this is not going to help, but I gave it a try. A patient of mine said, can we please try it? And I said, yes, it's not going to hurt you. It's real diluted. And they called me a week later and they were like, this is the best thing you've ever done for me. And I was flummoxed. I'm like, wait, what? What did I give you again? I had to go back in my books. I'm like, oh, the Aaron thing. And then another patient asked me and another. Finally, I said, okay, there is something to this. So I really think there is something to this concept that people who are heavily colonized, if that's how we want to call it, It's not just a benign bystander. It is actually doing bad stuff to the skin. And now we're learning more and more about it. There was a beautiful paper showing some of the different toxins staph makes on your skin. There's one called Delta toxin. It actually fuels inflammation. It can damage the skin barrier, all these kinds of things. So I think that that's a very long answer to the question, which I really think our conception of staph as a driver of disease has changed in just the 15 or 20 years I've been in practice. It went from just being a quiet bystander that, yeah, we see this, to now saying, okay, this is potentially a pathogen that is driving driving the condition for at least some people. Obviously, it's not the cure-all. And now there's a race for how do we get rid of it without abusing antibiotics, without causing trouble, without making it so that we now have resistant superbugs everywhere. And that's a hard question.
That is. And that's one reason why I wanted to have this conversation about how are we potentially, and it's not blaming anyone. I want to be very clear about that. I know sometimes living with skin issues and sometimes saying, well, if I did this, it must be my fault. We're not trying to blame anyone for anything. We just want to educate and share with you all some ways in which we can perpetuate an unhealthy cycle. And that's sort of the idea of saying, okay, like how can we have a better regimen, a better hygienic regimen around using pots of cream and different things. But I also think it's important for people to know when to go get help. And that's where I oftentimes find like I 8 out of 10 initial calls that I will get for my practice, I can tell just from listening to the person talk and the symptoms, I'm like, you need to go see a dermatologist ASAP for that. That is sounds like an infection. No, I'm managing and it's just a flare. And sure, I'm like, no, I don't want to hear from you again until you go see the doctor. Sure enough, they have an infection. So as a dermatologist, what's the point at which someone needs to get help and ask if there's an infection going on? It's not just a flare.
I think it is a little tricky, but I'll tell you some hard lines where I would not ever say, you know, I would say you should never get to this point without going to see somebody. If you have a fever, like 100%, no arguments, you know, or feeling feverish at all, feeling that kind of feeling where you feel sick, you have to go in. If you have skin pain, pain is a really important sign. If you're itchy and uncomfortable, that's one thing. But if you touch your skin and say, ooh, it hurts, you really need to go in. I would even say that is on the border of a derm emergency. We have to make sure we know what's going on. You may be infected. All these kinds of things are really important to rule out. And I also think that if something's going on and on, it's one thing to have a bad day or two. You're like, oh, my skin's kind of bad. But now we're on day 4, day 5. Maybe you don't have a fever. Maybe you don't feel that sick, but your skin's not healing. One of the reasons may be that you are infected or carrying enough staff that you just can't get over this hump. And that's really important to get checked. It doesn't have to be a dermatologist. I know there's a long wait sometimes, and my patients often express a lot of frustration before they, you know, hopefully once they get to see me, then I'm much more accessible, but getting in to see us can be hard. So of course, see your pediatrician, see your primary care doctor, even see an urgent care and just say, hey, look, my skin's hurting me. Can you check it? Can you do a culture? Do you think I need an antibiotic? Most physicians and healthcare practitioners are pretty well equipped to at least make that decision. And at the end of the day, I'd much rather over-treat at least once or twice. You know, I don't want to make a habit of it, but I'd rather overtreat and give somebody an antibiotic who didn't need it rather than, God forbid, miss that. And then they're really sick.
Yeah. And it's burning. I've had some other people talk about how their skin feels like it's on fire, like it's just burning. That would be a part of that pain scenario.
I think it really could be. Yes.
Okay. And so it's not just staph, right? There are other potential organisms that we've talked about, Demodex mites. We talked about that in regards to rosacea, but what are some other potential infections that people could get on the skin aside from staph that people don't talk about as much?
So you also mentioned strep. That can be a skin infection. And I've seen some bad strep pustulosis, like pustules that are pretty uncomfortable. We can get Pseudomonas infection. That's sometimes, you'll hear it called hot tub folliculitis. So people go into a hot tub at like a resort or a hotel, and then there's bacteria in the water that loves the hot water and it goes in their hair follicles. They get pus, itchy, painful pus bumps all over. Then of course there's fungal infections. So Malassezia, we know as one of the guys that plays a role in cradle cap and also seborrheic dermatitis, but it can also be a big driver of a certain subtype of atopic dermatitis we call head and neck eczema, and they're kind of overloaded with it. And then, of course, there's herpes virus. So for our eczema patients, and truly anybody with kind of damaged skin barrier, instead of just getting a couple cold sores, because their skin barrier is abnormal, it can spread out. We call that eczema herpeticum. And that can be actually dangerous. You can actually get really, really sick. You can die from it. It's rare, but it's quite an emergency. So when I'm listening, when a patient calls me, I'm listening for pain, fever, discomfort, or if they say, gosh, this one patch won't heal. And I've had those patients come in and sometimes bacteria, but sometimes say, oh my gosh, you have eczema herpeticum on your legs and we need to treat that. So that one requires not an antibiotic, but an antiviral, you know, like acyclovir or valacyclovir, and we can treat it. But if they're sick, they got to go in the hospital. I give them IV antivirals for a few days to make sure.
That's like really spooky. That's serious.
It's quite serious.
So this is why everyone, we need to ask for help. And if you feel like you are working with someone right now and they're not listening to you, find someone else who does listen. I know, Dr. Leo, you have a practice. You're in Chicago?
Yep, we're right downtown in River North.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I've had a lot of clients go see Dr. Leo, and his associates are very responsive and very, you guys listen. I like that. You really listen and take stock. And every single client I've had is like, oh my gosh, there was the first time that I didn't feel like I was looked at sideways. Like, you guys really listened and helped. And it's important to have someone on your side who can help you when you're we have recurrent staph infections or whatever type of infections we have. But also too, making sure to dig like you do. That's so fascinating that you also look at the family, the environment, their products. You really do dig through their life to help them sort out the reinfection process, because it is important to stop. And then also too, I want you to share once more. We had talked in a previous episode about the Pink Magic cream. And you guys make that and sell that through your office, correct?
We do. Yes. We've had that for a number of years. That was originally made for my daughter when she was a little baby with eczema. So that's a non-steroidal use of topical vitamin B12. And it's this really cute pink color, because B12 is kind of crimson red. So when you mix it up, it's pink. And that's been a very nice treatment. It's very mild, but it's quite soothing. And for some patients, they say that can actually extend or even potentially replace the use of a steroid.
That's awesome. So we'll make sure that we'll have that information in the show notes, so that if people are interested in also getting that from you, or if they want to contact you about setting up an appointment, they can do so. We'll have everything in the show notes. So, yeah, I really appreciate you coming back. Thank you so much for being so generous with your wisdom and your knowledge and your experience, and also just being so open-minded. It's incredibly refreshing. And I think that's probably one reason why you have, like, out of all the interviews that you and I have done, you're like, your interviews are at the top of the charts of all time downloads, because people just really appreciate your approach to things. It means so much, not just to me, but to everyone who listens. So thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. If I can help people, that makes me really happy.
That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, and hopefully we'll have you come back again sometime.
I'd love it.
I hope that this conversation is as eye-opening to you as I felt it was necessary, because too many people are suffering with things that they think are something else. And in reality, if you're really struggling with a skin infection, it is critical to not just the health of your skin, but also your sanity and your ability to sleep and feel just way more normal, to get that resolved as soon as possible. And so all of the information, all of the links, everything we've discussed, you can find in the show notes over at skinterrupt.com/176. And if you've seen people talk about going through a flare, right? It's pretty easy. If you're in a Facebook group, guaranteed, you're probably going to see at least one person post about that almost every single day. Or you know people that could really benefit from hearing this information, make a point to share it with them. I believe that the amount of information that we can share that we believe is helpful is crucial to helping someone else on their journey, right? So if it has helped you, if you found this insightful, you know, we're each on a mission to help ourselves and help heal our skin, or help heal your child's skin or your husband's skin or whomever. You're on that mission, but we're also in this journey together. So I encourage you, I implore each and every one of you to make a point to share this episode, because the longer that someone is living and struggling and even suffering through a flare, that's a moment of their life they'll never get back ever again. Share this episode to educate our community and make sure that we can each get there with the least amount of suffering humanly possible. It would be great if we could just, like, you know, snap our fingers and poof, the eczema or psoriasis or whatever you're dealing with is gone. We're just not there yet in terms of how conventional medicine really approaches this whole thing. And also too, it took time for our bodies to end up in this state. So it's natural to also have it take time to kind of get ourselves out of it. But in the meantime, we really want to ward off and be very knowledgeable about looking for skin infections and asking for help when appropriate. So All right, I'm going to take a step off my soapbox for now. Just remember, if you haven't done so yet, head on over to your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to rate and review The Healthy Skin Show and then hit the subscribe button. That way you don't miss any of the new research and all of the hope and inspiration that we love to share here. I wish you a wonderful rest of your day, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.